From Creative Force, I'm Daniel Jester, and this is the e-commerce content creation podcast. For 2 years, my friend and guest for this episode, Terrence Haynes Jr., and I worked in Amazon's ONT8 photo studio. Until I left Amazon for Farfetch, and T stayed with Amazon as our studio was folded into a new flagship studio just south of downtown Los Angeles. ONT8 was a pretty scrappy studio, mostly being made up of any equipment we could scavenge from other studio storage areas. T and I worked closely together on everything from developing new tools for difficult-to-style products to planning and booking talent. This episode is a pretty casual conversation with my friend T, talking about the studio we helped build together and catching up on what he's working on now and how he's planning to grow his career into some emerging technology for product imaging. This is the e-commerce content creation podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Jester. Joining me for this episode, my old friend, Terrence Haynes Jr. Hey, buddy.
What's going on?
It's been a while since we've talked.
It has.
So, Terrence, we've been doing on this podcast a little bit of a sort of like lightweight retrospective of what e-commerce creative production was like through, like, we kind of have been focusing a little bit around 2015, 2016, 2017. So during that time, end of 2016, you and I started working together at what I've been calling sort of a startup studio for Amazon, ONT8, based in a distribution center. And it was
the first of its kind.
It was the first of its kind and scrappy as hell. That was a scrappy little studio. So it was a small team, the creative team. It was me. It was you. It was Chelsea, another stylist. And then we had a Digitech Colton, and that was the original creative team. And we relied heavily on freelancers to staff out that studio. But just to give the audience kind of an idea, I think 90% of our equipment was scavenged from other studios' storage rooms. Yeah. Not just our studio equipment, but our mini fridge and some like couches. Other studios were just sending us stuff they wanted to get rid of with a note said, "Hope you enjoy the old couch."
We got 100% hand-me-downs.
100% hand-me-downs. I think I might have bought very few things brand new for that studio. There's a handful of things. Well, one thing I did definitely buy early on, I had forgotten about this when we were talking about this episode, but do you remember? It's worth saying to our audience that this studio was mostly a hardline studio, but we did shoot some off-figure apparel. So that was sort of like your area of expertise was on the off-figure apparel, and we also got some fashion accessories, some handbags, hats, wallets, that kind of thing. It wasn't a huge part of our volume, but it was a section of it.
Right.
And that first, when we first turned flats on, we realized that what we thought was the right strip box for the lighting for that set actually wasn't.
No.
So it was supposed to be a large strip box, and all we had was an extra large softbox, way too wide, way too much. And so the solution for that, this was like in the first month of that studio being open, the solution for that was that we cut custom inserts out of big sheets of foam core and just blocked it off so that it was only a strip. It was super
ghetto.
We made a strip box. Yeah, gaff tape and foam core, which is about all you have. We had tons of scrappy little things, and I think like one of the biggest projects that we were able to kind of push, like kind of push through in the broader Amazon organization was the universal scale form. And that was something that you and I worked on a lot. So do you want to describe what the universal scale form was for the audience?
So basically the universal scale form, well, let's go back to like what it used to be. It used to be individual people, figures of like these shapes, silhouettes of like a man, a woman in different poses for different type of bags. So the universal scale for basically combined this person into one, and we were able to shoot every type of bag on one person. It saved so much time and so much space, and it was just like super efficient for us.
I've talked about it on the podcast before that the scale shot for Amazon for handbags was a shot of the bag shot on what, like you said, a silhouette, and then our retouch teams, our disc team, composited in the original model shot. So these silhouettes were printed off from whatever studio day that they shot those models with, like, you know, a men's crossbody was held a certain way and everything, like elbow handbags, crossbody bags, men's, women's,
backpacks,
clutches,
fanny packs.
And everything. Somebody, I really genuinely forgive me, especially if you're listening to this podcast, but I cannot remember who at Amazon was responsible for actually designing the form itself. It was not us. We had nothing to do with the design, the actual shape of the form.
It was someone at SDF8, I believe.
I think you're right. I just can't remember exactly who it was. But the idea of this thing was it had all the right connection points, but it was one form. And the reason that we did this, do you remember the reason that we decided we were going to push through with the universal scale form instead of buying all the other forms?
If I remember correctly, it was that we just couldn't find, like, we couldn't find all the shapes of the people. And, like, someone was like, oh, we started creating this universal scale form. And we were like, all right, let us test it out. Since you guys, like, kind of abandoned it at one point, like, let us test it out.
Yeah, it was totally out of necessity. We were almost, I think, blindsided with a bunch of bags that we had to shoot, and we didn't have any of the proper forms, and it was going to take something like months for them to be made and sent to us.
Shipped. Yeah.
And so whoever was responsible for designing the universal scale form shape emailed me the vector file, and I printed it off at a local print shop at 100%, so it was the full, like, life size. And right. I went home. I stayed home that day, and I cut it out of, like, MDF or something.
Yeah.
We framed it as we had to do it out of necessity. We have to get these bags shot. I'm not going to be able to make 15 of these forms.
Yeah.
So we're going to do the universal form, and we're going to present it as a test. And the big pushback was it was absolutely faster for us. I mean, it was undoubtedly faster for us to shoot handbags on scales with that universal form just because you're saving the time of moving the different forms on. But you also remember how much organization went into, like, how you flowed those bags to set, like how the prep person would flow those bags to set so that you
could needed to be batched. Yeah.
So that you could maximize how much time each form was on set. Since we had the universal form, that was totally eliminated from the equation. You just had the right form for every bag, no matter what order you shot them in.
And then you helped Digitech out or Dis out by, like, clipping the right shape or the right bag that the mannequin was supposed to wear. And that was
exactly right. That was the and those were the kind of scrappy solutions that we were doing all the time. We actually included a cue card in the image for the disc technician that said that was a picture of the form they were supposed to use. And then do you remember how we made sure that the bag actually could be put on that form? Because we had to, at the photography step, we had to make sure that, like, yes, it's a universal form, but we had to make sure that the bag strap hit at all the right points. Do you remember how we solved that problem?
No, remind me.
Yeah, that was less of a styling thing and more of a technical thing, right? But we used Capture One overlays. We used those Capture One overlays. So we would bring in, if it was a men's crossbody, we would use the men's crossbody overlay just to double check and make sure that our straps weren't going to get cut off or going to be in a position where the disc team wasn't going to be able to make the edit happen.
Right. Or the elbow was, like, actually at the elbow instead of in the middle of your chest. Yeah.
Exactly right. But man, like, we spent, I think we were largely responsible for pushing the universal scale form through. And we spent a lot of time testing and refining and meeting with the disc teams.
Yeah.
I love this example as a way of holistically looking at production process and savings. Because yes, it took a little bit more time for disc, but the benefit at the studio was way more than the couple of extra seconds it took the disc team. Like, yes, it was 100%. Harder for them. But we were saving so much more time.
Time, and I mean, we were able to shoot, I think, on an average, like, the regular studio could do, like, maybe call it 60 scales a day. We could get up to 100 plus scales a day just by, like, not having to go through that carousel of different figures.
Yeah, and the set, our scale set was half the size of every other studio that had a scale size. I mean, it was a slam dunk all the way around.
Right.
And we tested all, like, do you remember all the crazy shit that we tested as well? We tried the ring flash reflective media thing so that the scale form would disappear.
Unnecessary.
It would just look like a floating bag. And Dis was like, no.
Like, no.
this is too much.
Because the one we ended up using, I mean, that wasn't the only, that was, like, version 2, the one that we, or version 3 almost of the one that we, like set on that was final. Like, our first version was.
Oh my gosh, you actually just unlocked a memory for me. Yeah, we broke one, right? Somebody broke one at one point, and, like,
Gladys
that's right. She was called Gladys. That's right. Gladys stood for something, and I promise you it's in one of my notebooks. I wrote it down. Yeah. I'm certain of it. I wrote it down in there. Yeah.
It does.
Another project that you and I worked on together that I was really proud of, and it's like It's unfortunate to me that it never really, we never took it to like past the prototyping phase, but I think it was a really great solution, was the harness system for shooting strappy stuff. And I think it came up, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it worked for bags, it worked for backpacks, it was great for that, but it came up because didn't we have like 300 dog harnesses to shoot and they were supposed to look like they were floating?
They were supposed to look like they were floating and they had to be at a certain angle and like, it didn't make sense to just out them on like the regular C-stand pole. Like we had to get them to like float somehow. And man, this hanger that we like put together ended up being the perfect solution. And then we found out it worked for other things too. But yeah, it started on the dog harnesses, those 300 dog harnesses.
Yeah. Shout out to our friend Chelsea. She put in a lot of work on those dog harnesses too, styling out those dog harnesses. But yeah, the style guide for these, and this goes back to conversations that we've had recently on this podcast, and I've been seeing some of them on LinkedIn recently too, is that like the style guide for these harnesses was intended to look like the harness had a dog in it, like styled out so that you could tell that it was a dog harness, but obviously there's no dog in it, which required tons of monofilament fishing line to like suspend the harness and pull it in different ways. But then you had to shoot front and back, which meant that you had to strap up the dog harness the first time, shoot that one, make all your refinements, and then totally take it down, undo all of that work that you did, to restring it back up in reverse and try to make it look like you just rotated it just right there. Yeah. And so we developed that. We took a garment hanger with a rotating hook and we hung that on the C-stand arm. And then we tied all of our monofilament string and clipped it to that, which could then be rotated. So once you did it once, you just rotated the whole assembly to whatever shots you needed.
We went from 20 minutes to 2 minutes.
So I was gonna, that's right. I was going to ask you about that if you remembered, because I was looking through my notebooks for all of, because you and I sat on set and it was me and you and Chelsea. Some days we tested it with both you and Chelsea. And I believe, do you remember if we also rotated the photographer or if I only did shoot it? Because
when we were testing it, we just tested you with you. But like once we figured it out, it was easy for anyone to use. I mean, I know we got Renee on it at one point. But I'm telling you, I found that it worked best on strappy shoes. I mean, you string it up one time. Think about shoes when you have to flip it left, right? I mean, Amazon, we had, I think, 9 shots per each shoe. So, like, think about a lace-up shoe.
Gladiator sandals.
Gladiator we weren't going to deal with it for too long. We were like, this is crazy. We got to figure something out. And once that happened, we were like, let's test it on shoes. Let's test it on backpacks, purses.
Because backpacks was another one. You and I shot a lot of backpacks together. And, like, you know how I feel about backpacks. I hated shooting backpacks just because the straps, it was always a problem. And this, it was a game-changing solution to shooting backpacks.
How do we take that from, like, from prototype stage? Like, it's still useful today.
No, I was going to ask you.
I used it like a couple weeks ago, to be honest with you.
I was about to ask you if you still use it, because Terrence, you still work for Amazon. Our studio, ONT8, got rolled into what they call LAX25 in Vernon, which is like a flagship studio for Amazon. And I was going to ask you, do you still have an opportunity to use that setup while you're styling?
Yeah, I don't shoot that many on white silo shots anymore, but for the last like couple months we had to, just because of how the business is changing. And I used it, and everyone was asking me how I got done so fast. Like, my art director just thinks I'm like super fast, and I'm like, I'll take it. But I got this tool that we invented 5 years ago.
I have a tendency to romanticize the past a little bit, to feel really nostalgic for the past. I do totally remember that working at ONT8 was incredibly challenging from a professional and emotional standpoint. Like, we had some hard days in that studio. But whenever I think back to it, all I can think about is those days that we worked together and we invented a way to do something faster and more consistently and just, like, blast through our work.
Yeah, I mean, we had the freedom to, like, you know, our manager kind of just let us do our thing as long as it got done. And then once we created those things, you know, because it never worked. Like, the studio never worked how it was supposed to work, you know? That's why it was so emotionally taxing. It's just we were always waiting for it to turn on 100% and it didn't. So, like, all we had was, like, time to invent things and, like, make our jobs just simpler.
For the geeky listeners of this podcast who are curious, our studio lived in a distribution center for Amazon, which sometimes people use distribution and fulfillment interchangeably. But at Amazon, our building, our particular building, was actually distributing product to the fulfillment centers. So, like,
yeah, they call it the receive center.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, the, like, a truckload of, like, PlayStations would come in, and they would unload these pallets of PlayStations, and then they would take one pallet, and it would go to this fulfillment center, and the other one would go the other way. The idea was there was this process called sidelining, that they were going to peel off product that needed product images, bring it into the studio, we would shoot it, so that by the time that shipment of PlayStations got to SDF8 or wherever it was going, there was already sellable images online. It's already been shot. Right. It's already been done. And just I never had a ton of insight into the technological challenges, but we ended up shooting very little product that actually came through the sideline thing. We were just like functioning largely like a regular studio for Amazon. Like, yeah, they were just transshipping product directly to us. But God, do you remember those days of like what a nightmare that was when like we more than once we had entire truckloads of samples that never showed up.
Right. Yeah. That was supposed to come. It was supposed to get sidelined. I mean, we would get 100-150 items a week.
Yeah.
And most of it's hard lines. You know, that's 2 days for two photographers.
we got burned so many times on expecting product and then booking teams based on what we expected and then having it not materialize that, like, you and I in particular, we worked really closely. I sort of had you training, not training, but like kept you up to speed as my backup for planning for that studio. Because a big part of my job was functioning as the producer and just like, what do we have? What do we need? How can we get it shot? What's the timeline and all that? And we are on this podcast, we are getting ready to start to talk. We're going to do a little bit of a micro focus on the idea of planning. And that's part of why I'm going through all of my notebooks is because I don't know if you probably remember this. A lot of people, I think, remember this about me. But a big part of my process was walking through that studio with my dumb notebook doing math. Just like, how much do we have? What do we need to shoot?
I remember getting the notebook. I was an assistant notebooker.
Let's take the last few minutes, T, to get kind of, I'd love to get caught up on what you're working on now. You've continued to work on a bunch of projects at Amazon. That's a really cool thing about working for Amazon is you have your day job. Even if you're styling or art directing or shooting, you often get to work on other projects. So, like, you know, it's not a super well-kept secret that Amazon product imaging is making some shifts into 3D. And I don't want you to share anything that you can't share, but I'd love to know what you're thinking about, what you're working on. And also you as like an art director, what are you thinking about on like the how your career shapes out in the next few years with all this future technology?
I mean, you kind of have to move towards 3D. If you don't, you'll be left behind. I mean, it's just as simple as that. Like, 3D is the new wave. I'm looking to move more towards styling 3D. Like, since Amazon, we're in a home studio now. So that's basically why LAX was built as a home studio. So instead of building out this room, let's just do it 3D and let me art direct it. Let me style it. You still need someone there that knows what looks good, that knows how lighting moves. A lot of 3D artists don't know that. They can just create the assets. So, like, you still need the art director and the stylist to come in and pick those pieces. And that's where I come in.
So have you been working and learning, like, working in 3D and working with virtual styling and stuff? Because I know I've been definitely seeing more and more photographers like on LinkedIn sharing that they're dabbling in 3D work. And I think it makes a ton of sense for stylists and art directors to pivot into the space as well.
100%. Yeah, I've been working with our art director and working on room layouts. I mean, that's just because we're in the home category. It's so expensive to bring a couch or bring a chair into this room and ship it to the studio and have us style it out and shoot it where we can just sit there and create the asset and like build out the room.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about like not only do you need set builders, but you need people to assemble the furniture a lot of times once you receive it. You have to have a place to store it. Then you have to do something with it. It's not usually very cost effective to like break it down and it's not sellable once it's built. You have to do something else with it, donate it or sell it off or something.
We donate it and we're in a, I want to call it 300,000 square foot facility and like, you know, more than half of it is storage of furniture. It's crazy how much that we just store things to use it for images when you can just create it 3D and it looks good now. Like maybe 5 years ago, I could understand needing to shoot it. But today, it's hard to tell what's 3D and what's not.
Well, I think it's probably worth revisiting this conversation in a year or two. And when I have been asking around about some apps to play in, to kind of play with like the virtual photography space a little bit, like lighting 3D models in ways that are a little bit more interesting than some of the tools that are out there today. It's probably worth revisiting the conversation soon and see where you're at on like 3D art direction and styling and kind of like figure out what's going on. Cause it feels closer than ever.
For me, it's 3D and video. Like, those are the two categories that make the most sense right now. Yeah. That's where everything's moving towards. You just have to see one thing like 3D, it's just easier. And then with videos, everybody wants to see things in motion. So,
yeah. And I think, like, and you know, not to leave AI out of the conversation, because AI is like a mad hype beast right now. But the AI, I think it's more and more clear to me that, like, if 3D is sort of the workflow and the way that photography was the workflow, that AI is becoming like the Photoshop part of that.
Exactly.
The AI is 100%. There to like enhance things, to get things across the finish line. It will be totally useful for that. But we're not like, you know, we in the business that we're in, we're not going to be wholesale AI generating images, because that's not how we operate.
Right. No. Yeah. We're not there yet.
T, man, so good to catch up. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on this podcast. It's great to talk to you. And looking forward to seeing some cool 3D stuff coming our way on LinkedIn. Can people connect with you on LinkedIn, or where else can they find you?
Of course. No, LinkedIn is the number one place you can find me. I'm on Instagram, but let's do LinkedIn.
Yeah, LinkedIn. keep it professional. Terrence Haynes Jr.
Terrence Haynes Jr.
That's it for this episode of the E-Commerce Content Creation Podcast. Many thanks to our guest, Terrence Haynes Jr., and thanks to you for listening. The show is produced by Creative Force, edited by Calvin Lands. Special thanks to Sean O'Meara. I'm your host, Daniel Jester. Until next time, my friends. Hello, Ian.